Okay, so we're diving into the book of Joshua today, and I think it's safe to say there's one part that probably has you thinking, this is a little rough. You know, the Israelites' destruction of the Canaanites. I mean, it raises some pretty tough questions.
It really does. It's not just an isolated event either. It really forces us to consider some big theological and even philosophical concepts, like how did ancient cultures view land ownership, and what did divine justice look like back then?
Absolutely. And we're going to tackle those questions head on today. We're going to be looking at this event through the lens of Dr. David Howard, a scholar who's done a ton of work on the Old Testament. So we'll be unpacking the biblical account, but also looking at archaeology and the cultural context.
Right. It's not just about what happened, but why it happened.
Yeah.
And one of the first things Dr. Howard points out is this idea that for the Israelites, the land didn't actually belong to the Canaanites. It belonged to God.
Okay, so it wasn't like a typical conquest where they just decided to take over someone else's territory.
Exactly. It was more like God was granting them the land. And this idea of God's ownership ties into this huge theme that runs throughout the Old Testament. God's sovereignty, his ultimate authority over everything, including the land itself.
I see. So God was the ultimate landlord, so to speak. But that brings up another question. If the land belonged to God, why were the Canaanites even there to begin with?
Well, that takes us to our next point, the Canaanites' sin. The biblical text, specifically in Deuteronomy and Leviticus, gives us a pretty detailed list of the things they were doing, things that the Israelites saw as incredibly offensive to God.
Okay, so what kind of things are we talking about? Because sin can mean a lot of different things depending on the time period and the culture.
Right, we're talking about child sacrifice, incest, idolatry, practices that really went against the core of Israelite beliefs. And the crazy thing is archaeology actually backs up a lot of these biblical claims.
Oh, wow. Like, what kind of archaeological evidence are we talking about?
Well, they found idols of Asher everywhere. She was a Canaanite goddess. And then there's the discovery of this thing called a charnel house in Carthage. It's basically a mass grave for infants who were apparently sacrificed.
Intense. So their culture was just radically different from the Israelites in terms of how they viewed the world and what they considered sacred.
You got it. And it's important to remember that for the Israelites, their faith wasn't just some private thing. It was woven into every aspect of their lives, their laws, their culture, everything. So when they encountered a culture that embraced practices they saw as abhorrent, it created a huge conflict.
That makes sense. You mentioned idolatry earlier. Was there anything specific about the Canaanites' worship that clashed with the Israelites' beliefs?
Yeah, there was this concept of sacred prostitution that was tied to their fertility cults. They believed that by engaging in these rituals, they could please their gods and ensure a good harvest. But for the Israelites, this was a complete perversion of true worship. They emphasized purity and holiness, so it was a total clash of worldviews.
Yeah, I can see how that would lead to some serious tension. But understanding the extent of the Canaanites' sin, does that make the Israelites' actions more justifiable? Like, is it still a difficult thing to read about?
I think that's a question that everyone has to wrestle with for themselves when they read this part of the Bible. It's not about saying violence is okay. It's about trying to see things through the lens of their beliefs and their understanding of God.
So God wanted the Israelites to be separate, to have a distinct culture and faith. But how did they justify going to such extreme measures? I mean, wiping out entire people groups.
That's where the concept of haram comes in. It literally means utter destruction. But it had a much deeper religious significance for the Israelites. It wasn't just about wiping out their enemies. It was about purifying the land, making it a sacred space. They believed they needed to cleanse the land of these pagan practices in order to protect their own faith, which was still pretty new and fragile at that point. Remember, they were fresh out of slavery in Egypt.
Right. They'd spent centuries surrounded by Egyptian culture and beliefs, and now they're entering a land where the Canaanites are doing things that go against everything they believe.
And God wasn't giving them a free pass either. When the Israelites failed to fully drive out the Canaanites, as we see in the book of Judges, it led to some pretty serious consequences. There was chaos, moral decline, and they even ended up adopting some of those Canaanite practices themselves.
Sounds like the stakes were pretty high for them. They saw this as a matter of spiritual survival, not just military conquest. But how does the Abrahamic covenant fit into all of this? You know, the promise about God blessing those who bless Israel and cursing those who curse them.
That's a great question, and it's key to understanding the bigger picture. In Joshua, we see that covenant playing out when several Canaanite kings form alliances and attack the Israelites.
So their attacks were seen as fulfilling the promise of a curse.
Precisely. It's presented as a direct consequence of their opposition to God's chosen people. And this idea of divine judgment, God intervening in human affairs isn't unique to this story either. It pops up again and again throughout the Bible.
That makes sense. But was this command to destroy the Canaanites a blanket order? Were they supposed to wipe out every single person who didn't worship Yahweh?
Not quite. It was a very specific command, tied to the conquest of Canaan. You know, with all the unique circumstances we've been talking about, God's ultimate desire was always for the Gentiles to embrace him.
So the Old Testament God wasn't always about us versus them, like I always thought.
It's more nuanced than that. The concept of the Canaan is a great example. It refers to a foreigner living among the Israelites.
Oh, so like an immigrant.
Exactly. And the Canaan had a special protected status in their society. They were even allowed to participate in certain religious rituals. Yeah. So it shows us that God wasn't looking to just wipe out everyone who wasn't Israelite.
That definitely changes my perspective on the Old Testament a little bit. It seems like even in the midst of this command to destroy the Canaanites, there was still room for grace and compassion.
For sure. And that leads us to another important point that Dr. Howard makes. The possibility of repentance. Even though it seemed like God had given this absolute order to destroy the Canaanites, there was always a chance for them to change their ways and avoid destruction.
Were there any examples of that in the story?
Well, think about Rahab, the prostitute in Jericho, or the Gibeonites. They were both spared because they decided to side with the Israelites and their God. Their stories show that God's judgment wasn't arbitrary or predetermined. It was a response to their actions, and there was always the possibility for them to turn things around.
It reminds me of the story of Jonah and Nineveh. God was ready to destroy Nineveh, but then they repented and he changed his mind. So are we saying that the destruction of the Canaanites could have been avoided if they had repented as a nation?
That's a really interesting question. It makes you think about free will and divine judgment and whether people can really change even when things seem hopeless.
Yeah, this is tough. You know, it's hard to reconcile these stories with what we believe today, especially when we see religious violence happening in the world right now.
Yeah, it's definitely a sensitive topic. We need to be careful not to impose our 21st century values on a completely different historical context.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's important to acknowledge the dangers of religious extremism.
So how do we compare what happened with the Canaanites to those modern day examples? Right. What's the same and what's different?
Well, on the surface, it seems like both situations involve a group of people who believe they have a divine mandate to eliminate another group based on religious differences. But the big difference is the very specific context of the Israelite conquest of Canaan. It was a unique event tied to a specific covenant and a particular time period. It wasn't meant to be a model for how to handle all future conflicts.
So you're saying it wasn't a free-for-all? They weren't just going around conquering everyone they met?
Right. The command to destroy the Canaanites was an exception, not the rule. And as we've been discussing, it was based on the particular sins of the Canaanites and the need to safeguard the brand new Israelite faith. You know, look at how they interacted with other neighboring nations. There were alliances, trade agreements, even intermarriage. It wasn't all about conquest and destruction.
I'm really glad we did this deep dive. It's definitely given me a new way to think about this story. It reminds me that history is never simple, black and white.
And the Bible, being a historical document, reflects that complexity. It deals with tough issues and forces us to wrestle with questions that don't have easy answers.
So what can we take away from all of this? How does this ancient story help us understand things like religious violence and extremism in the world today?
I think it teaches us to approach these issues with nuance and with an open mind, willing to see things from different perspectives. We need to consider the historical context and the motivations of the people involved and recognize that you can find both good and evil within religious movements.
We shouldn't just use the Bible to support our own agendas. We have to really engage with it honestly and thoughtfully and remember that it was written in a different time and culture.
For sure. And be willing to admit that maybe our own interpretations need to change as we learn and grow.
It's not about finding all the answers. It's about seeking wisdom. It's about struggling with tough questions and being open to changing our minds.
Yeah, it really does feel like you're uncovering all these different layers. You know, history, culture, theology. And even though this all happened so long ago, it still makes you think about your own beliefs today.
That's exactly it. These ancient texts, they don't give you easy answers, but they definitely spark some important conversations. You know, conversations that can be hard, but also really enlightening. They force you to look at human nature and God's plan for the world in a new way.
So as we wrap up our deep dive on this topic, what's the main thing you want our listeners to take away from this conversation? I think the biggest thing is to approach these difficult parts of the Bible with humility. You know, come to it with curiosity and be willing to grapple with things that maybe make you feel uncomfortable. It's not about trying to make these stories fit into our modern way of thinking. It's about letting them challenge us and help us grow in our understanding of God.
I like that. It's about embracing the journey, even when it gets a little bumpy.
Exactly. And you're not alone on this journey. There are so many people who have wrestled with these same questions. You know, scholars, pastors, other believers. Don't be afraid to learn from them and talk to them about what you're thinking.
We really hope this deep dive has given you a new perspective on the destruction of the Canaanites. It's a complex story, but it's an important one. And we hope it's inspired you to think more deeply about your own faith journey. Keep exploring. Keep asking those tough questions and keep seeking a deeper understanding. Thanks for joining us.